started.
Thank you so much, Rabbi Feigenbaum. It's such a pleasure to be here. It's a wonderful occasion. And I have to first clarify that the topic, it sounds a little bit like it comes from a shidduch service, introduction to Nashim. But we're not actually going to introduce any women. And the Seder is, sorry, apologize. You can leave if you want. I didn't mean to mislead in the advertising. But the topic, really, of Seder Nashim is not really women in that sense, but rather in the sense of Ishtos Obeso, in the sense of families. And it's not about females as much as it's about families overall. And that's something that we can find in the background, certainly, of Maseches Yevamos and really of the whole Seder. And just to try to highlight a few places where we find these themes coming out. I know it's so difficult when you start this Masechta, especially it has this notorious reputation, and it's a little intimidating, and you just try to work through all the charts and the maps and the family trees of all the different details of the different relationships. But the truth is, beyond all those details, it's actually especially appropriate as a way to start this Seder, because it is listing relationships in the literal sense. And that's really the theme of the Seder and the Masechta and that Mishnah, telling us in a very basic level what it means to be related, listing actual relationships in the context of a mitzvah of Yibum. And that mitzvah of Yibum is a mitzvah in either form, Yibum or Chalitza, that we don't see too often, we hope not to see too often. It didn't come up, it involves tragic circumstances, but the nature of that mitzvah goes to the core of what it means to be related. The concept that if, Rahmanul Islam, a man should pass away with no children, but he has a brother, the Torah obligates that this brother should come in and marry his widow in order to continue on his name, which itself is somewhat of a mysterious concept. We don't find that it involves the actual bestowing of his name on the relationship or on any future children, but somehow the tradition of this man is continued through this relationship, and it's an overwhelming kind of idea. And this is something that the Chassam Sofer comments upon in his commentary to Chumash and Parshas Kisetze, where this mitzvah is found, that we know that there is a very strong clash here that the mitzvah is winning over. Because normally, this would be a prohibited erva, this would be an isser of Gilui Arayos, for a man to marry the widow of his brother is actually forbidden in the Torah. That is considered to be an erva. And yet, the Torah is sending us, the Chassam Sofer says, a very strong message here by creating this mitzvah of chesed that is so overwhelming that it overcomes what would otherwise be very strictly forbidden, becomes an obligation through this mitzvah of Yibum. And in fact, the Talmud has a discussion that perhaps it actually even creates a relationship that's already there. There's a discussion of a concept called Zika, which refers to a relationship that's already existing between the brother-in-law and the widow. It's a whole discussion what exactly that would mean. Rabbi Yosef Engel, in his Sefer Asvin Daraisa, has an analysis of whether this means that the relationship that the original brother and his wife had somehow continues into his brother, or is it that the mitzvah obligation creates a new relationship, but either way, it's there, and it only needs to be acted upon or activated through the mitzvah of Yibum, or through its alternative of Chalitza. And we have these two parallel concepts, a mitzvah of Yibum, and if not that, Chalitza, but together they create a message of what it means to be related, what it means to be biologically related, what it means to be related through marriage, and what it means emotionally to be connected, to have such a sense of identity that you would take on such a task in memory of one's closest relative. And this is something that the Maram Shik discussed. The Maram Shik was one of the great students of the Chassam Sofer. And he talked about this idea in one of his tshuvas, where he talks about the nature of these two mitzvos. We have either Yibum or Chalitza, and Chalitza is what happens, as we know, we find nowadays, if we can't perform the mitzvah of Yibum, and in general, the mitzvah of Yibum least in Ashkenazi circles, is not performed nowadays. And the Torah gives this alternative of chalitza, where there's a ritual that releases the woman to marry someone else. And one might get the impression that it only serves that purpose, that because of the zika, because of the relationship, so the woman is not permitted to marry anyone else unless something happens, either yibum or chalitza. So one could get the impression that that's what chalitza does, that chalitza permits her to remarry, and it's only for that purpose. But some of the achronim discuss this question as well, such as the Oneg Yontif and his Chuvas, where he observes that it seems that it's actually not just a matir, not just something that's there to allow the woman to remarry, but it's a mitzvah to do either way. Even if she wasn't interested in remarrying, we have to have either yibum or chalitza. And the Maram Shik in his tshuva explains that we have here with the mitzvah of yibum a tremendous message about the whole notion of what it means to be related so closely that you are identified with someone else in a complete way. And he notes various elements that exist in this mitzvah, that here we find that the most deep-seated desire that an individual would have to be able to pass on his tradition and his legacy to a future generation, the ability and the willingness of a brother to step in and to take over that role, if that's what needs to happen, and the notion that that has to be purely motivated. There was some reference before to the position of Abba Shaul, which requires that the mitzvah of Yibum be performed only out of complete pure motives. Abba Shaul's opinion was that if one were to marry his sister-in-law with any other kind of motivation, so then it would lose this mitzvah component and it would revert to its original strictly prohibited status. And this highlights that in this mitzvah especially, the role of this intent, of this purity of motive, is so crucial and so important. And the Maram Shik, through that, explains a medrash. There's a medrash that has the perspective that when Avraham Avinu went to war to rescue his nephew Lot, and after that happened, the king of Sodom offered him all these riches, and he said, I'm not interested in taking anything. I don't want any reward from you. I don't even want a shoelace. I don't even want a srochnal. And the Gemara has one perspective on what that represented for his descendants, but there's a different perspective in the Medrash. The Medrash says that because Avram was so noble in this sense, and he said, I'm not interested in any kind of reward, not even a shoelace, so his descendants got the mitzvah of chalitza. Chalitza involves a shoe, and the symbolism of the shoe linking back to this shoelace that Avram said he's not interested in taking. So that's a very striking symbolism. And the Maram Shik explained that essentially it's this quality of Avram Avinu that's represented in the mitzvah of yibum and chalitza. That here Avraham Avinu is ready to go to war, is ready to lay his life on the line in order to save his nephew, in order to save his relative. He has that type of identification with his family, that he's ready to go to such lengths. And he has pure motives. He's not interested in taking anything. He doesn't want any kind of reward. And says the Maram Shik, that's what we find now represented in this mitzvah of chalitza, which is there together with the mitzvah of yibum, the notion of yibum chalitza together. They represent these qualities of Avraham Avinu, and that goes to the core of what it means to be a family, what it means to be related, what it means to have such a sense of identity with someone else that without any ulterior motives you will step in and do what you can to act on their behalf. It's a very powerful idea. And the Gemara in Maseches Yevamos, and we find that throughout this Masechta, we find various indications of what it means to be a part of a family and a part of Avram's family specifically. The Gemara is going to say much later on in Daf Ayin Tes that the idea of Avraham Avinu and his qualities traces down to his descendants. And if you want to know what it means to be a descendant of Avraham Avinu, so then we should look for these attributes. They're people who are people of chesed, of gmilas chesedim, people who are rachmanim, baishanim, all of the qualities that Avraham Avinu had are passed down to his descendants. And if we want to be a part of his family, we want to be identified as a part of his family, so then we look for these attributes that he displayed at that early stage. And that's something that we seek to emulate and seek to represent all as a part of that family. And the Gemara continues throughout the Masechta to tell us more about what it means to be related, both in concept and in intent, and how to can identify with someone so closely that that is what creates that bond of relationship. So the Gemara, for example, on Daf Samech Beis, talks about the concept of marriage and tells us that a husband has to love his wife as he loves himself, umechabda yosemigufo, that he has to respect her even more than he respects himself. And that sounds like a little much. Okay, it's one thing to say he should love her as much as he loves himself. Why does he have to respect her even more than he respects himself? And it seems that what's being represented there is really, it's essentially a identity principle again, that he should feel completely identified with her and as the same person, ishto kegufo, and that's what the ahava component represents. He loves her as himself. But when it comes to kavod, when it comes to treating her the way she needs to be treated, so we know men and women are not exactly the same. So if he tries to just think, okay, what would I want, and treat her in that fashion, it's probably not going to necessarily work out so perfectly. You have to shoot a little bit higher than that. You have to aim for a little bit more. But it starts from that principle of being so closely identified that we have this notion of ishtu kagufo in how they treat each other. And therefore, he seeks to find a model of respect that comes from there. And this Masechta goes on to tell us a lot more about what it means to be family and what it means to be related, both in the micro sense and in the macro sense, and the notion that Judaism as a whole is about family. So included in Maseches Sivamos, we have from Daf Mem Hei on, we have the notion of Geirus, the rules of how one converts to Judaism, and it reflects the idea that it's not just about the philosophy, it's not just about the Yigin Malikram, it's not just about the mitzvos, but it's about the family. You know, there was a whole Taram a few weeks ago with Whoopi Goldberg, and is Judaism a race or not? And it's a little bit mystifying, because we know that it's a religion, but it's more than a religion. It's a religion that is about a family, and you can't convert to Judaism without connecting to the family, without the idea of Amecha Mi, without throwing your lot in with the Jewish people as a family unit. And that's a part of what Maseches Yevamos is conveying to us, again, this theme of family again and again in all of its different iterations. And then the Gemara goes on later on in Daf Samech Beis to tell us about the concept of Puruvu, the notion that we're looking to pass on our tradition to future generations, and we're obligated, and how exactly that obligation plays out. So once again, it becomes this theme of family that is manifesting itself throughout and telling us what it means to be related. And all of this is in the context of not only being related to each other, but also related to the Ribono Shel Olam. And much of what's going on in between these sugyas is focus on helping us to understand our relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, still in the beginning of the Masechta, in the first parak, you will see the sugya of Aseh Docha Lo Saseh, the notion that when there is a clash between different mitzvah imperatives and regulations, if there is a conflict between a positive mitzvah and a negative mitzvah, a mitzvah saseh and a mitzvah lo saseh, the mitzvah saseh is going to win out. And it's an interesting concept, especially because we normally relate to lo saseh's prohibitions as being more severe, as being more chamer than positive mitzvos. So the idea that if there's a clash, we should choose the positive mitzvah, choose the mitzvah saseh, is itself quite interesting. And the Ramban, in his commentary to Chumash, explains that this all goes to comment on our relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and how we connect to Him, and that we connect to Him both through Ahava and through Yira, through love and through fear or reverence. And in general, the Lo Saseh, those represent Yiras Shamayim, those represent our fear of God, and the Mitzvah Saseh, those represent our love of God. And if we have to choose between an expression of Ahava or an expression of Yira, so we'll choose the expression of Ahava. That's how the Ramban understands that. It's two different forms of our relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and This is how we decide the conflict. We go with the Ava, we go with the Mitzvah Saseh. And that Ava of Hashem and his words, together with Yura, expresses itself throughout Yevamos in other ways. So, for example, the Gemara on Daf Chaf Aleph tells us about the obligation to protect God's Torah, that we have to make sure that the rules of the Torah are supported, and that the rabbinical commandments, many of them are geared towards that function. So the Gemara quotes on Daf Chaf Aleph, the Gemara quotes the Pasuk from Achrimos, Ushmartim es Mishmarti, that we are obligated to protect God's Mishmaris. Mishmaris is generally understood as a reference to Torah prohibitions. So much of rabbinic law is there to protect the Torah, is there to make sure that this relationship is supported. Our reverence and our adherence to God's Torah is supported through the rabbinic prohibitions, and that's what that Gemara is indicating to us. And in fact, later on in the Masechta on Daf Tzadi, the Gemara is going to tell us a very striking idea that there is a concept of Yesh Koach Bidei Chachamim La'akor Davar Min HaTorah, that there is authority given to the rabbis in their efforts to protect the Torah, not only to make new rules, but sometimes to even make rules that seem to uproot rules that are in the Torah itself. So perhaps the most well-known example of this is that when Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos, so we don't blow the shofar, or when the first day of Sukkot falls out on Shabbos, those will happen in the same year, we don't take Lulav and Esrog, even though those are mitzvos min HaTorah. As far as the Torah is concerned, we're supposed to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, whatever day it is. We're supposed to take a lulav on Sukkot, first day of Sukkot, whatever day of the week it is. But the rabbis were afraid that that may lead to violating the Torah, that may lead to carrying on Shabbos, and therefore they were able to make enactments that overrode these Torah commandments. And there's an essay about this in the writings of Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, the Kovetz Shiurim, the Kovetz Aris Tivamos, where he goes into great length about how this works. And one of the possibilities he suggests is that essentially God gives the rabbis the authority to pretty much rewrite the Torah as far as this is concerned, and to say there is no longer a mitzvah to blow shofar on the first day of Rosh Hashanah if it's Shabbos, or to take a lulav on the first day of Sukkot if it's Shabbos. All of that becomes a part of the Torah itself, because of the recognition that we're all working towards the same goal. This is all one end. This is all about protecting this relationship. And therefore, it manifests itself in that way that the rabbis even have such striking power. And there are many other sugyas in Maseches Yevamos which also go to this message, the message of the essential unity of the Jewish family and the efforts that we take to protect that unity and to recognize what that family structure means. So, for example, if you get towards the end of the first parak, you'll see a sugya that's relevant to next week, it's relevant to Purim. There's a prohibition of losis godudu based on a pasuk in Parshas Re'eh that we're told that we're not supposed to be divisive amongst ourselves. We're not supposed to break up into separate factions doing things differently. And it comes up in the discussion of Megillah, because the first Mishnah in Megillah talks about a practice that we don't really see today either, that we do have different Megillah readings on the 14th and the 15th for walled cities and unwalled cities, but the first Mishnah Megillah said that the farmers who supplied food to the people in the big cities, they were allowed to read even earlier on the previous Monday or Thursday, you know, the 11th, or the 12th, or the 13th. And there's a whole discussion in the Rishonim how exactly that happened. Did they gather together while they were in the cities and read the Megillah there? So the Rishonim all discuss that that's a problem, it would seem, because that would seem to violate this goal of losis godudu, that we can't be divided up, that we have to all be following the same practice. And Rashi understands in his commentary there that the issue of losis godudu is that we don't want to look like there's two Torahs, that we're following two different religions, and that's something we're very concerned about. The Rambam and the Sefer Achinuch, they understood that the issue was machlokas. We don't want to get into fights, and if we have people doing different things, that could cause machlokas. And they invoke that discussion of the Nitziv and others about whether losis godudu applies only to halachos, or does it apply also to minhagim. And they take the assumption that if it's about not looking like there's two Torahs, so when it comes to minhagim, so we know there are a lot of different practices that doesn't necessarily create the impression of two Torahs. But if we're worried about starting fights, so we know People can fight about anything, so even when it comes to a minhag, we certainly are concerned that that may lead to quarreling, and that may chip away at the essential unity of the Jewish people, of the Jewish family, which is a part of the message of this halacha as well. And the Gemara continues later on to have other sugyas that make this point. You get to Daf Samachay or so, and you have a few other sugyas that illustrate just how responsible we are for each other. The Gemara has the sugya of tochacha, of the obligation to set someone straight if they're doing the wrong thing. And that's also something that we are not so good at doing nowadays. The Gemara elsewhere says that nowadays, meaning already then a days, we don't know how to give tochacha. The Rambam and others explain that the way that we're supposed to give this musr, the way we're supposed to give this correction, is supposed to come from such a sense of identity, from such a feeling that you and I are the same, and whatever you do affects me, and if you're less than perfect, I'm less than perfect. If I'm messing up, you're messing up, and that we should feel that type of connection. And nowadays, we're not so good at conveying it that way. We convey these messages with a sense of superiority and looking down at the other person. So that's what the Gemara says. We're not really able to be effective with tochacha, because at the core, that's what it's supposed to mean. It's supposed to mean that we're so connected, we're so related to each other, that everything that we do affects the other, and therefore that obligation of tochacha reflects that. The Gemara over there also discusses a fascinating concept that there is normally a prohibition to lie. We say midvar sheker tirchak, we shouldn't say anything that is not true. And yet the Gemara considers there that if we need to say something in order to maintain shalom, in order to keep the peace, so then it could be that it's mutter to do that, mutter l'shanos bidvar hashalom, to alter the truth a little bit in order to keep the peace is permissible. And then the Gemara has another opinion that disagrees, says it's not true. So it's not permissible to alter the truth to keep the peace. It's a mitzvah. It's an obligation. You have to do it. It's not something you could choose to do or not do. And it's a whole discussion why that is. And it seems to reflect the fact that as committed as we are to MS, we are even more perhaps committed to the idea of shalom when they're in conflict, that shalom is such a crucial imperative. Maybe it overwhelms the idea of emes in the sense of Esed Do Chalosa say we spoke about before, even these two crucial concepts that are so important. In a conflict, we still have to find where our core is. But some explain that it has to do with the supremacy of shalom over other things, because that's what makes everything else work. So, for example, the idea that we have an obligation to do 613 mitzvos, but none of us are able to do 613 mitzvos ourselves. They don't apply to any one person at any one time. So our connection to the entirety of the Torah comes from our connection to the family of Klal Yisrael, but because the mitzvos apply to the whole unit, and somebody is doing something somewhere, so therefore we're all able to connect to that through that family relationship. But it's crucial that we uphold that family relationship, so maintaining the shalom becomes such a high priority, and that's how some explain the midrashim that point out the pasuk in Tehillim, which says, Bakesh shalom v'radfehu, that we should seek out shalom and chase after it. So the comments, the Medrash, that we don't find when it comes to mitzvos that you have to chase after them. You follow them when they're incumbent upon you, but you don't necessarily have to seek out a mitzvah that's not obligatory on you. The whole discussion whether you should buy land in Eretz Yisrael to fulfill the dinim of Shemitah if you don't happen to live there. So we don't find that you're obligated to chase after mitzvos in that way. But Bakei Shalom Rafei, you have to chase after shalom. So they explain that that's the link that makes everything else work. The fact that we are one unit, the fact that we are a family, and that's how everything else comes together. And they even explain, Rav Nachum Zemba had a comment that relates to Purim, that we have an obligation of Shalach Manos on Purim, and one of the explanations for why we do that is a comment by Shlomo Alkabetz, the author of Lecha Dodi, in his commentary to Megillas Esther, where he says that we are trying to counteract what Haman said about us. Haman said that we are scattered and dispersed and we have no connection to each other. And we want to show that even when we are geographically distant, we are still connected and we are able to have this bond. So we send gifts of food to connect to each other and to highlight that bond. And Rabbi Nachum Zemba commented that that reflects an idea that the Chazal have in next week's parsha, it's a medrash in parsha Sav, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu declared that Gadol HaShalom, that Shalom is so crucial, that the Jews, Afilu Avdu Avarazara, Vizman Shehem Bechabura Achas, that even if they have idolatrous past, but if they're able to create one unit, so I will mochel them, I will forgive them. So that notion that this Klal Yisrael unity, this family sense, is so crucial, is the theme that goes throughout Maseches Yevamos from the very beginning to the end. And it's really a theme that comes through all of Seder Nashim as we go from one Masechta to the next. So just to say a few words about the rest of the Seder, so we go from Yevamos to Ksubis. So Ksubis then tells us how we really build a couple relationship, how we build a marriage relationship, and how there is a requirement that the husband establish to his wife that there is this mutual sense of responsibility, and he's going to support her and take care of her in all senses of the word. And that's the obligation of Ksuba that gives that Masechta its name. And we generally assume this obligation is actually a rabbinic obligation. It's a Takanas Chachamim, although the Gemara has an opinion, and some of the Rishonim take this position as well, the Ben Tam in Tosfos on Daf Yud, that Iksuba is actually on some level a chi of Daraisa, and the Rambam gives a little bit of a mixed message on this point. And it seems like it's a little bit of both, that the details of the Iksuba perhaps were enacted by Chazal, but it reflects a concept in HaTorah that there is a basic obligation of a commitment that is solid and supported and genuine when you enter into this relationship and you become a couple, and a couple that is really a part of a broader society. So the rest of Maseches Ksubis also takes up themes that has to do with the balancing of the individual's needs and the needs of society. So the obligation of tzedakah is discussed at great length later on in Maseches Ksubis and of Samach Zayin, around there, where the Gemara talks about, on the one hand, the obligation of De Machsoro, that there is an imperative to make sure to provide for those who are in need, even to great extremes, if that's the case. And yet, the Gemara also says a little bit earlier on Daf Nun that Chazal were afraid that we would go so far with that we would become impoverished ourselves. So Chazal made a takana in Usha that we shouldn't give more than a fifth of our money to tzedakah, and that reflects that fact that we have this balance, that we're trying to maintain ourselves while at the same time trying to be there for the rest of society, and how we strike that balance essentially is one of the major messages that the Gemara is evoking there in Ksubis as it continues this detail. This continues to tell us about how we look to build a family. And that's also a theme, this balance, that informs the Masechtas that come in the middle of the Seder. We have Nedarim and Nazir and Sota, and Nedarim tells us about certain things that we could do, perhaps as an effort to try to protect our own spiritual aspirations. Maybe we may take Nedarim, we may make commitments to try to focus ourselves better, and even things that we choose to do as a good practice could end up having the status of a neder, such as, for example, learning Daf Yomi. And the founder of the Daf Yomi, Rav Meir Shapiro, has a work of Shilas and Tshuvos where he talks about, in one of the Tshuvos, about that question, that maybe learning Daf Yomi takes on a status of a neder. And then he asks a question, so what about the siyumim? Sometimes when you get to the last daf, so it's like a quarter of a daf, it doesn't necessarily go to both sides, it doesn't necessarily go to one side, and that maybe by taking on daf yomi, it's a neder to learn a daf a day, so what happens if that day's daf is not a daf, it's only a quarter of a daf? So he has a whole tshuva to discuss that question, reflecting the fact that these actions take on a status of commitments, a part of this idea of a neder, which theoretically should be a good thing. Except that the Gemara goes on to tell us there that it's not so simple, that nedarim are risky and perhaps even problematic, and the Gemara has a statement that kol hanoder neder la'atzmo bona bama la'atzmo, that somebody who takes on a neder, it's as if he built a private mizbeach for himself, which is normally forbidden. And it's not just because we're afraid that you're going to break the neder, and it's risky, because the Gemara goes on to say that hamakaimo, somebody who upholds, who fulfills his neder, is still problematic as compared to somebody who actually sacrificed on the bama. And the Maral and others explain that we have this careful balance that on the one hand, yes, we're trying to work on ourselves as individuals, but a neder can separate us from the rest of society, from the rest of the community, and that's a risky thing, and it's a problematic thing, and it's represented by the bama, by the private mizbeach somebody may make in his backyard. It seems like he's very devoted to God, but in a way that separates him from the central community, and that's a fundamental problem which nedarim could bring up, and therefore there's this need to balance one's personal spiritual growth with the continued connection to the overall Jewish family. And that balance, which sometimes has to go to one direction, sometimes has to go to the other direction, is really the theme of the next two Masechtas, and that's how the Gemara explains why they're all there together. We have Nedarim and then Nazir and Sota, and the relationship and the progression there is that Sota, which deals with the situation of the unfaithful wife. And the Gemara says that somebody who witnesses this and witnesses the consequences of such behavior, and this is a very important warning to bring to mind the week before Purim, the Gemara says the reaction to that should be Yazir Atzmo Min Hayayin. He should be careful to avoid getting drunk. He should be careful to avoid wine, perhaps take the step of becoming a Nazir, to recognize just how much it's necessary sometimes to take extra measures in order to uphold one's protection and one's personal boundaries, because there is this tension sometimes between how we make sure that we can maximize ourselves as individuals while still maintaining that connection to the community, that careful balance. And the last parak of Nedarim focuses on that idea as well, the notion, that parak called Narim Urasa, which talks about the idea that Torah has in the beginning of Parshas Matos, that if you have a young girl or a married woman, so theoretically her father or her husband, respectively, depending on who we're talking about, might find the need and would be given the power to step in and to abrogate her nedarim, if she takes a neder that puts her at odds with the needs of the family. So because of that priority, the father or the husband sometimes has this ability to cancel the neder, again reflecting the back and forth, the push and pull of this very careful balance. So all these mesechtas are giving us advice, giving us tips and building blocks as we seek to build a family. So after learning all that, so we're ready to get married. Almost. Not yet. Because before we have Kiddushin, so then we have Maseches Gittin, which talks about divorce. And that seems striking. Why would we have Maseches Gittin before Kiddushin? And the cynical line that they say about that is Hikdim Refuah L'Machla, that the remedy is given before the illness. But in a sense, it's really a serious point, because perhaps it forestalls the illness, that the idea of being reminded of just how easily things can go wrong and just how things can fall apart is a necessary step before learning about marriage and being reminded of all the different aspects of this. And the Gemara has a statement in the last daf in Gittin that when a person divorces his first wife, the Gemara says the Mizbeach cries. And some of the commentaries explain what that means, that divorces can happen for all kinds of reasons. Sometimes it was never meant to be. Sometimes it wasn't really an appropriate relationship to begin with. But sometimes it means that there wasn't enough sacrifice. Sacrifice is always necessary, even if it is meant to be. So the idea of the Mizbeach representing the sacrifice and representing that type of a model of relationship, the Gemara invokes that in order to remind us of just how important that is. And throughout the Masechta, in the middle, we have the concepts also of Tikkun Olam, that the Gemara says that there were certain enactments that Chazal made in order to address certain vulnerabilities in society, which again is a reminder that there's a need for this constant vigilance. Things can go wrong very easily, and to have that reinforced and to have that brought to mind is perhaps a part of the message of Gittin that's necessary before we finally get to Kiddushin. Kiddushin about how that relationship actually is concretized and created halachically, how a couple gets married. And we know it starts off with the concept of the Kinyan Kiddushin, and that concept gets a bad rap because people tend to look at it and say, oh, look what happens in Judaism. You see, the man buys his wife. The man purchases his wife. That's what the Mishnah says, that Taisha Niknes. So look at what's going on in Judaism. Isn't that a terrible thing? And it's a misunderstanding, because it doesn't mean in that sense of purchase. It means to use the terminology and the concepts of purchase to achieve a similar but very different end. And the Rishonim point this out in the beginning of Kiddushin and elsewhere. It doesn't make sense to say the man is buying his wife. That's not what's happening. But we're using the technique of kinyanim that are invoked in the business world in order to solidify a marriage. And why is that? Because if you look at the concept of kinyanim in the business world, the notion of a kinyan, as the Chazon Ish explained, is that in order to transfer property, so you need to have, we call gemiras das, you need to have seriousness. So that's really what makes it happen, but we need some representation of the seriousness that we can look at. So the various kinyanim are the representation of gemiras das, representation of seriousness. So when it comes to a marriage, there isn't any purchasing going on. But there is a need to show that the relationship is something serious, to know, to show that there's an actual commitment here. That's how the Rambam describes in the beginning of Hilchos Ishus, when he talks about the whole history of Jewish marriage, that at the time of the Torah, it became established that when a couple wants to live together, there first has to be an expression of commitment and seriousness, and that's what this mitzvah of Kiddushin represents. The Rambam understands that Kiddushin is actually a mitzvah, is actually an imperative, and if we want to show that we're serious, so we look to the world of Kinyanim in order to find how do we express seriousness? What do we have to do in order to show that this is something that is meaningful and real? So that whole notion, which does create a relationship after that kinyan happens, so then they are now a couple, they are now ishto kegufo, they are now one person, and that becomes very real because of that commitment. And then when you get to the second parak, the first parak condition is very long, if you get to the second parak, so then you find out what that relationship is all about. And the Gemara tells us that it's necessary that a man truly love his wife, and therefore it's a bad idea, the Gemara says, for somebody to just send off a shliach and say, just find me somebody and marry her. It's much more appropriate that the husband should know who it is he's marrying. And the Gemara says, because he's obligated to love her, how do we know? Because the Torah says, V'ahavta l'reicha kamocha, that the same mitzvah that applies to all of us, that says that we should see a sense of identity in the other, it's that same mitzvah which says a husband and wife have to love each other. So clearly it's not the same relationship as we have with everybody around. It's a whole different level, but it's the same concept, just intensified in the purest form, that this idea of really feeling the sense of identity, of Yahav Tlarecha Kamocha, recognizing that we're all in this together, and that the person who you feel that about most strongly, that same sense of Ava, that's the spousal relationship, and that's what the Gemara is highlighting, but it is an indication of the whole notion of how we are supposed to feel this Ava for all of us, supposed to recognize that we are all in this together, and that we are one family, and that essentially that's what all of Seder Nashim is basically conveying to us, that we have a concept of identity that creates relationships, that relationships create obligations to each other. It's what the mitzvos of Yibum and Chalitza convey to us in the concepts of Geirus and Peruvu and all of these themes that Maseches Yevamos teaches us as we then move into becoming a couple that's a part of society, as the themes of Ksubas convey, and the idea that we were constantly working to balance our personal needs with the needs of that broader community, as Nedarim and Nazir and Sota are teaching us, and then to really understand how these relationships are created, first with a tremendous appreciation of just how fragile everything can be that Maseches Gittin conveys, and then with that awareness going into the concept of Kiddushin, understanding that we are able then to create that bond and to experience true identity that can teach us how we relate to all of us. So one of the best ways to bond is through Talmud Torah, is through our efforts to understand God's word and his wisdom that he conveys to us through his commandments. And Daf Yomi is a fantastic way to do that and to be able to all be literally on the same page, to be able to share that commonality as we create a community of Lomdei Torah is a fantastic thing. And Yashar Koach to all of you, whether you are being Mesayim and starting a new Seder or just starting a new Seder, or whether or not you make it through the first few pages of Yevamos, but every effort, every step, it's already challenging, but don't get too scared. It gets easier after the beginning. But the idea of connecting in this way, of creating a community of Lomdei Torah, as the Daf Yomi has played such a role in bringing about, and as has had such wonderful reflection in this beautiful community. It's such an honor to be here with you for the Siyum. It reminds us of what we're able to accomplish with these kinds of commitments and this awareness. And as we approach Purim, which is about that theme as well, and Adar, the whole notion of Ribui Simcha and Adar is a greater commitment to have an awareness of the needs of society. And at this time, when the world is at war and we have so much anxiety and trepidation and anguish and prayer that that should end soon, so we know that the theme of reinforcing that commitment and reinforcing that sense of identity, just as it did during the threat of Purim, just as when that war was being waged and there was a redemption through that enhanced awareness of how we are all one, it should again bring about miracles, and we should soon see that there should be only peace in the world, there should be no more war, and quite the opposite, the ahava, the ahav shel reicha kamocha, should continue to inform and to characterize everything we do and everything that we are. Mazel tov.
Again, I want to thank Rabbi Feldman for coming to join us this evening, and mazal tov again to everybody else.